So as Jim Ott comes on up, go ahead and keep coming this way. No backpedaling, it's too late now. So as Jim comes up, as we all know, we're entering a new season at Grace Point, and a search committee has been formed for an interim pastor. But in the meantime, we're going to have different people from inside the church, from outside the church, come in and preach. And one thing that Session would like to stress to you is that when Jim is here preaching and teaching with us, and you'll see his face around a bit over the next few months, he is here solely as our preacher to teach us. And if you have any pastoral care needs or any pastoral concerns, then you need to come to any one of us on Session for that. So he's kind of like a rock star in to preach and then out of the building, and then you don't get to bug him. So we'll make an announcement when he leaves. Jim Ott is out of the building. So and then that'll be it. All right. So no further ado. Thank you for being here.
So the title of the sermon is Good News. So the good news is, the bad news is, you know how that works, right? You have to have bad news and good news, they have to go together. So the bad news is, yes, I'm going to show up here periodically over the next couple months or as best as I can help out. But the good news is, you don't actually have to talk to me. So that is what, did I get that right? Okay. So the bad news is, like, you have to listen to me, but the good news is you never actually have to talk to me. All right, good. So what a delight it is to be at Grace Point. And just as a moment of introduction, appreciate Ken just getting in touch with me and saying, we'd love to have you help manage this transition for us, just filling in to speak. And it's a delight for me, as you guys know, and I've said this before here, there's nothing I like more than the sound of my own voice. And so to have a platform for doing that is delightful. But also, and just as a little word of introduction, Ken and I met yesterday with Emily Ensminger, who's the director of campus ministry at UD. And Emily and I are both going to be filling in for January and February off and on. We won't be the only thing you see in January and February, but we will be some of what you see. And our hope is that to do a series through that time where we'll both be speaking along a similar theme. Now, we decided to do that after I had prepared this, what I have for you today, but I think it will still serve as a good introduction. So we don't know what the series is called yet, and we don't know exactly what dates it'll be and when, but Emily will be here next week to kick it off. And it's going to be something along the lines of following Jesus as opposed to believing in Jesus, and what it means to put our faith into action. And we'll be probably, if you want to just get a head start, we will be probably using the book of James as our foundational scripture and then using other things as well. So if you want to get ahead of the game for when Emily and I are here, you can start reading the book of James as a kickoff to your new year. We'll be spending some time there. Okay, Emily, we're obligated. All right, there we go. With that in mind, let's begin with the reading for today, which comes from Luke chapter 2. We'll go to Christmas one more time. I don't know about you guys, but about 5 o'clock yesterday, I said, man, I gotta get this tree out of here. I gotta take these stupid lights down. Because it was, it's been nice lately, and it's like, I don't want to wait till the weather's bad. I just want to get this stuff done. We have a tendency to just want to kind of put Christmas behind us, but let's go there one more time. So Luke chapter 2, you heard this over the Christmas season. We'll read it again, starting in verse 8. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger. Who doesn't like good news? I mean, straight up, who does not like, raise your hand if you do not like good news. Like, there's never been anybody that said, I don't really like good news. Like, I prefer the bad news. Like, I would rather have the bad news. But have you been in that position where you had to wait for the news, right? When it's good news, everybody wants some. When it's good news, when something is good, everybody wants to be a part of it. We can even talk about this in terms of other contexts than news. For example, have you seen the new Star Wars movie? Some people are like, I went there the first night. Other people are like, what's Star Wars? What is that? Here's the thing. For people that are into Star Wars, they want to know, is the movie good? And when a movie is really good, all of a sudden everybody wants to go, because when it's good, everybody wants some of it. But when the movie is bad, like the last Star Wars movie, which was bad, people came out of that, Kayla's back there, she's rolling with this. Like, people came out of that movie saying, let me just tell you what happened. Nothing, and just wait until the next movie. Don't go, don't waste your money. So, do you hear what I'm saying? When something is good, everybody wants it. Everybody wants a piece of something good. And nobody wants a piece of something bad. You have to endure things that are bad. And you guys have been in that position, right, where you had to wait for the news. You didn't know what kind of news you were going to get. One of the places we see this is when there's a natural disaster, perhaps there's a hurricane in the south, and maybe you've had this experience or maybe you've just watched it. But you know somebody that lives in the place where the hurricane is attacking, or a tornado goes through a town, and you know somebody who lives near there, or maybe you have a relative that's in a certain natural disaster area. And if you are on social media at all, you will see people posting from those areas saying, just letting everybody know that I'm okay. And then all the people underneath will comment, this is really good news. But you're waiting because you don't want to hear the bad news, which is, no, my relative, my friend, the person I care about got hurt or was killed. You don't want to hear any of that. Some of you have gone to the doctor or gone to the doctor with a relative, and they took a little sample of tissue that they were going to test in a lab to determine whether that tissue was cancer or not cancer, but you didn't know what the outcome was. So you're waiting for the phone call, and the phone call comes, and you're waiting for good news. Nobody wants bad news. Everybody wants good news. My own life, when I was 16 or 17, I've tried to remember, for those of you that will relate to this, 16 or 17 was really a long time ago. Even though I still feel like I'm 16 or 17, right? The old people get this. All right, so when I was 16 or 17, in the summer, my grandmother suddenly collapsed and was taken to the hospital in an ambulance, unconscious. And in those days, in order to get news, some of you will not relate to this, you had to wait next to this box on the wall that had a cord attached to it. And we were actually at a campground that my grandmother and my grandfather had a camper there, and there was only one phone on the entire campground, and it was up in the kind of social area. They had a club area, and there was one phone. And so we were going up there all the time waiting to hear what had happened to my grandmother. And when they got to the hospital, they called and they told us, grandmother has had an aneurysm, a brain aneurysm, and she's in a coma. This was really bad news. As a young person, this is my grandmother whose place I was at and who we enjoyed being in that space so much. And all of a sudden, I didn't want to go swimming anymore. I didn't want to go fishing. I didn't want to have a campfire. Like bad news grips us. And my grandmother was in the hospital and they literally told us that with aneurysms like this, there's a good chance that she'll never come out of the coma. And so we grieved. You know, bad news. You understand bad news. And then, I don't know, she was Scottish. Maybe that has something to do with it. But she just went, nah, not today. And she woke up and she made a full recovery. And we got this call that grandmother had woken up and she was in full, like a brain aneurysm can cause brain damage. She had no permanent brain damage. This, can you imagine? Thinking your grandma was going to die, thinking your wife was going to die, thinking your child was going to die, and then all of a sudden the circumstances change and you're alive. That's good news. That's good news. And there isn't anybody who hears that story and says, geez, I wish your grandma would have died. When you hear good news, when you first hear the good news, when you first hear it, you hope it's true. You desperately want it to be true. Even if you're not sure that it is, you just like, I hope this is true. I hope this is true. I hope it's true. And you know this even more. When you hear bad news, you desperately hope that it's not true. Maybe they made a mistake. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe if we do another test, maybe we get a second opinion. Which reminds me of a joke I heard from Rodney Dangerfield yesterday. Right? Rodney Dangerfield goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, you got cancer. And Rodney Dangerfield says, I said to the doctor, I'd like a second opinion. Doctor said, okay, you're ugly too. All right, so anyway. Don't go to that doctor. Okay, anyway. The story of Jesus is announced to the first people with this. Don't be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Good news that will cause great joy. Now, remember what happened just before is the angel appeared and they were terrified. Can I tell you right now that if an angel pops in here and we all see an angel in the fullness of the presence of an angel, in a sense, that's kind of bad news for us. We're going to like, whoa, that's no, like I'm not ready for that. That's going to freak us out. And the shepherds were terrified. And the shepherds, remember, just as a brief moment, these were not the highest class people in the culture. These were the lowest of the low people. So when an angel shows up and they already don't think they're very good people just by virtue of their place in the culture, it's probably not for a good reason. So it was bad news. And then the angel says, but don't be afraid, I bring you good news that will be for all people. And our Christmas story that we celebrate, those of us who come to a place like this, and I don't know where anybody is. You might just come here because you've always come here. You might come here because your family come here. You might not yet know where you are in believing this so-called good news. But for those of us who include this story, and not this story, I don't have blonde hair, okay? Just like she's got blonde, it's pretty, but she didn't like, no, like no blonde hair. Like when, that's another sermon. Okay. We include this in our story because we believe that this story is good news and it's announced as good news. So why is it that for so many people that I work with, so many kids that I know, Christmas is not good news? Why is it that my favorite kids, now, for those of you that don't know, I'm a school psychologist, semi-retired, means I get to do whatever I want, whenever I want to, and I don't have to fill out forms. So it's like the definition of semi-retirement. You get to work, but only do the stuff you love. Why is it that for so many of the kids that are most precious to me, they dread the approach of the holidays? And they do not see Christmas as good news. What have we done? And I watch this every year, and now it's become a ritual for me to talk with kids about the fact that the holidays are not a good time. They're not a happy time. So Will, bless his heart, asked me the setup question. He said, so how was your Christmas? And I'm just going to tell you, this is my answer. Privileged. My Christmas looks like the commercials. Our cultural Christmas has covered up the meaning of Christmas. And if you don't get the cultural Christmas, are you with me on this, right? If you don't get the cultural Christmas, if it isn't happy around your tree, If you got to go to 8 different Christmases because your family is split in so many directions, and the one you go to, you got half the people drunk and half the people yelling at each other. I did a group with a group of 8th graders, and like, I know these kids, and like, what happens at your Christmas? Oh, it's very nice, and we all get together and we open presents. What's it like at your, do you like Christmas? Oh yeah, why do you like Christmas? Because I get what I want. Good start. All right, then I come to this one little girl, and you know, I know enough about her story. Do you like Christmas? No. What's it like at your house? Everybody fighting? Now the problem is, this gets lost in this, right? This gets lost in this. And so if you don't get a privileged Christmas, if you don't get what the commercials say you ought to get, what Christmas ought to be like, if you don't experience that, then you think Christmas isn't for you. And you lose not only this, but you think this isn't for you either. And here's the thing. This is our story. It's our story, but we've lost the plot. We've bought the culture and laid it on top of the manger. Isn't it true? We've turned being born in a barn to the poorest of poor, refugees, migrants under an oppressive military regime, we've turned it into a quaint place to be born. Like, I start wishing I was born in a barn. My dad used to ask me if I'd been born in a barn every time some of you guys know that phraseology, right? Like, we start to think it's pretty there. We start to think it's peaceful there. We start to think this is like, if you get born in a barn, rich people bring you gifts. I want that. We've turned the manger into a quaint place. Like, do you guys have Away in a Manger in your hymnal? Away in a Manger might be the worst Christmas song ever. Lyrically, some of you are like, that's my favorite Christmas hymn. Oh. The little Lord Jesus, no crying he makes. He's a baby. He was a fully human baby. Don't tell me he wasn't crying. Away in a manger makes it seem like it was a wonderful thing that happened to be born in a barn. When in fact, the light of the world was born into the darkest of places, to the lowest of people, in a very, very dark time. And the good news for all people is that a light has been born into darkness. And we see it. It was in our what do you call that thing? Where everybody reads back and forth? Like, it was in there. Anyway, that thing in the... No, what it was the call, just give me the bulletin. What did I do? The call to worship. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes. I apparently was not very well called. Okay. Look. For God's Spirit shines in us, giving light for our darkness. It was in the last song, the Holy Spirit's on light into our darkness. But we've sort of lost the plot. Now, Charlie Brown knew about this, right? Charlie Brown Christmas is my favorite. I watch it every year. Charlie Brown's kind of like, I don't know, Lucy. I know I'm supposed to be happy. I just feel kind of let down. I feel like there's something missing. And for the people who need Jesus the most, there is the most missing in them that only Jesus can satisfy. And we offer them cookies and trees and live nativity scenes, which I think are kind of cool. But what are we actually telling people? This is all a part of a wonderful thing that ought to happen. Here's my favorite, right? My favorite is the Little Drummer Boy. You guys like Little Drummer Boy? This is my favorite carol growing up. I love Little Drummer Boy. I don't know how many of you guys like it. It's one of those, it literally like would yank a tear out of my eye. So some of you guys are like, I don't know that one. Come on, you had to hear it, but here it is. Come, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Like, some people actually have a little drummer boy in their manger seat. They actually think that actually happened. They start putting in the carols into it. Like, what do we know about the manger scene? Who actually do we know was there? And if you read the scriptures for literal information, you've made a lot of assumptions about who was there. This is what we know about who was there. Mary was there, pretty much by definition. Jesus was there. Joseph was there. The shepherds came. That's it. We don't know that they were there. They're not mentioned in Scripture. We could assume that they are there, but if you read the story, there's no mention of cattle lowing or speaking. You know, at midnight on Christmas, the animals all start talking. Right? I saw that in the Waltons. Come on, that's got to be the truth. Another of our favorite movies, if you watch the old original, the it's kind of the origins of the Waltons story, The Homecoming. It's a great movie. It's awesome. We don't even know that there were animals there. We certainly know that there were no three wise men showing up at the manger. And that's very clear by the terminologies and the use and the times. That was much later, and Jesus wasn't in a manger anymore. But we've made it into this palatial, wonderful, quaint, beautiful thing. And the key thing to me is that it's peaceful. And Jesus wasn't born into peace. He was born into chaos. He was born into pain. He was born into oppression. He was born into brokenness. So the Little Drummer Boy comes along, right? We love this. Like, I used to collect versions of the Little Drummer Boy. I was going to bring him and play him today, but I thought that might push the envelope a little. Because I have a lot of versions of Little Drummer Boy. Boom. They told me. So the story is, right? The Little Drummer Boy comes, but I've got nothing to give. Like, everyone's bringing nice gifts for the king. Like, they're bringing gold and frankincense. I don't have anything to bring. And then I played for him. I played my best for him. And this baby that presumably just got born, then he smiled at me. Ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Right? And then, you don't have to bring the big gifts. Just bring the best that you have to Jesus and everything, and he'll smile at you. No! Look, I'm just going to offend everybody, right? Jesus didn't come for the best that you have. He came because of the worst that you have. And little babies don't smile. Like, come on. Like, that doesn't happen. But the theology that's inherent in cultural Christmas is, if you act good, you are good. And so we have to act good. We bring our best to Jesus, but actually Jesus didn't come for our best. He came for the worst of us. So every Sunday we all get dressed up and we come in and we're polite and we're nice to each other, but actually the darkness for which Jesus is born never gets dealt with. And the good news of Jesus becomes good news for the well-behaved. Becomes good news for church members. Becomes good news. But according to the angel, it ought to be good news for all people. And what do we know about good news? Whew, man, I've totally lost the plot here. What do we know about good news? When it's good news, everybody wants to be a part of it. Everybody wants to be. Let's just deal with the reason for the season, okay? Let's just deal with the reason for the season. Everybody loves this, right? Right? Jesus is the reason for the season. No, he's really not. There's no real evidence that Jesus was born on December 25th or in the middle of the winter. Some scholars, some people read, it was probably in the spring, not really sure. But here's the thing. Christmas probably wasn't even celebrated by the earliest church. Like, they didn't have Christmas. The reason that Christmas, as we celebrate it in the timing, came about is because when the Christians invaded Europe, if you want to use that, that sounds kind of military, I don't mean it that way, but when the Christians began to advance into Europe, they encountered a pagan culture that really was tied into the winter solstice, the movement of the heavens and the suns. and the winter solstice was the darkest part of the year. And so Jesus being born into the darkness was a message that the Christians tried to pair with the culture that already existed. Like, this is totally going to offend people. Jesus is not the reason for the season. The winter solstice is the reason for the season. And by analogy, your darkness is the reason for the season. Your sin is the reason for the season. And the good news is, you don't have to be captured by your sin anymore. You can be free. And everybody who hears this message ought to think, this is good news. I don't know if it's true, but I sure hope it is. I sure hope this is true. I don't know if this is true, but I sure hope it is. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Some little baby born 2,000 years ago is going to be the answer, but I hope it's true. Because I don't know what to do with my darkness. I don't know what to do with my pain. And I sure as heck can't tell people about it. Because it's Christmas. We're supposed to be nice. Good news is only good news if it counteracts bad news. Like, the reason that good news is good news is because there's bad news that you could get, but instead you get the good news. Grandma Ann, we're waiting for the phone call, right? We expected bad news. We got good news. Oh, my goodness, what a difference. But the good news was that much more glorious because of the depth of the bad news. We expected a phone call that Grandma was going to die or maybe had passed. We expected it. We were waiting for it. When the phone call came that she woke up and wanted to make us some more shortbread, we were happy. Because the good news counteracts the bad news. This is the gospel. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the good news for the bad news in every single person's life, including yours. So what have we done that so many people that we know think that the story of Jesus is actually bad news? That to be a Christian is bad news. That to follow Jesus actually makes things worse. What have we done? Now, I don't mean what has Grace Point done. In a sense, what I mean is, what have I done? And for each of us, what have we done that the people we know and care about actually think the message of Jesus is not good news? There ought to be a sense that this news is so good that even if we don't believe it, or even if we're going to resist it, there's something about them people that's totally different. The early church actually, without going into detail, they basically overthrew an entire culture run by a military dictatorship, the most powerful that had ever existed up to that time in that part of the world. And they didn't do it with an army, and they didn't do it with money, and they didn't do it with politics. They did it with a story that they called the gospel, and that's just a translation that works back to the good news, a good story. And then they acted on that story in such a way that people were compelled, so compelled that they were willing to face their own death rather than renounce this good news. This good news was so good that they were willing to face death. And many of them did for the sake of a story. And in 300 years, this overthrew Rome because it was such good news. And my friends, this is the good news. It still is. It's still that good. And when it's good news, everybody wants a part of it. So I just read a great book yesterday. Yeah, I read a book a day. Sometimes one in the morning, one in the afternoon. I just read a great book over the last month. It's called A Brief History of Thought. It's written by a French man named Luc Ferry, F-E-R-R-Y, think that's right. Check with me if you want to know. And he is a philosopher. That is his job. And he writes about the origins of philosophy and all the basic movements of philosophy through time, including Christianity and how it impacted culture, among other things. And his definition of philosophy is basically this: human beings have to come to some conclusion about the problem of death and the meaning of life. And all philosophy is designed in one way or another to address the problem of death, because we're the only animals that can conceive of death as an ending. Like, other animals don't seem to be able to, they know they're going to die, but like the concept, we don't seem to have any sense that animals can do this the way people can. And then if we're all going to die, what the heck are we here for? Like, why are we here? And he concludes, and this is so good. He concludes with this. Excuse me. He says, when it comes to solving the problem of death, to addressing the problem of death, there is no better news than Christianity, if you believe it. Now, he doesn't, and flat out says, I just can't believe it. But he hears the true message of Jesus, the true message of the gospel, and he says, man, but I wish it was. I think he's wrong, and I think he's wrong based on the stuff I see him write. I think his conclusions aren't quite right, because I think I'm smarter than a philosopher that wrote a book, whatever. Anyway, but even this philosopher, this incredibly intelligent, well-read, well-reasoned, insightful man, comes to the conclusion, yeah, that's good news. I wish that was true. I wish that was true. Even someone who has rejected Jesus wishes it was true, because he understands that the message is actually good news for the bad news in every person's life. And ultimately, that bad news is we're all going to die and be separated from the people that we love. And before we get to that place, we're going to hurt each other a lot, because we're not just all that well put together as we wish we were. And Jesus is the answer. And it's good news. All right, so let's do a little application and then we'll be done. Okay, so the angels come to the shepherds and they said, this will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger. That is not a sign for you, okay? Like, don't be looking around for a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger. That's not a sign for you. So what is this? It was for the shepherds, but it doesn't work for us. So what's the sign now? Well, the good news is Jesus told us what the sign is. And it's simply this: by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, that you are followers of Jesus. Okay, you will point to Jesus to all people in the way you love one another. Like, the way that you treat, starting the people that you live with. How many of you guys know that we're at our worst at home? 50 years, you guys got anything to say about? No, never mind. You guys are great. Yeah. They're through it. It's kind of like, whatever. I got no other options at this point. So, right? How many of you guys know that sometimes we're at our worst at home because we can let down more of our guard there? The reality is that we have a hard time dealing with the self-awareness that causes us to be broken in the first place. So it starts with the people we live with at home. But the reality is this: we encounter people every single day who are trying to decide whether the person they just met, well, let's just face it, are you good news? Like, this is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. That when you walk into a place, people are glad you're there. I don't believe what that guy believes. Like, I would never go to church. This Jesus stuff doesn't even make sense to me, but I wish I was more like him. Like, she's crazy. You know, she's quoting the Bible all the time. But man, I wish I acted more like her. Like, are you good news? When you walk into a place, and yes, at home, but not just at home. When you walk into a store, how do you treat the people you meet in the halls? Are you good news? Like, we're supposed to be good news, because the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which fuels everything that we do in our interactions with other people, or should, ought to be good news for the bad news in every person's life. And we're not going to get to share that if we're not good news ourselves. We are the light of the world. Jesus said that. Like, Jesus was the light of the world, but then he said, guess what? You follow me, you are the light of the world. Are you good news? I've talked to service people and waitresses, and maybe you're one of these people, or maybe you've been one of these people, who say that Sunday afternoons are the worst time to be a waitress because of the people that come from church and the way they treat the people that wait on them. Now, some of you are like, I would never do that. I always leave a $2 tip. Knock it off! Every Christian that goes out to eat, that waitress or that waiter ought to be so glad that they got your table. We should be good news. And that's the challenge. That's the good thing that we get to do. Like, this is good news. Jesus came into our darkness. And everybody that hears of this story ought to be hearing a story that they go, look, I don't know, that's crazy. Who really believes that stuff anymore? But I wish it was true. If you have a version of Christianity that you've rejected, or that you're considering rejecting, or that you know someone has rejected because they think it's bad news, that's probably the wrong version. So our challenge for 2020 is, let's be good news. Let's walk out of here and decide to be good news. Now, there's some other things we'll examine in the coming weeks about how we have to deal with our own inner darkness in order to be good news, because some people are really nice on the outside, but they haven't dealt with their stuff on the inside, and then it leaks. Anybody been one of those people? Most of us have. But as a beginning to this, let's decide we're going to be good news. We're going to tell people that they matter. And they're going to be glad that we walked into the room. And we're going to have a light that we will be desperate to share with anyone that will give us an opportunity. Amen.